employer vaccine mandate debate is done in the General Assembly. Governor Holcomb gets specific on tax cuts, plus the school curriculum bill is likely dead, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending March 4th, 2022.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
This week, the debate in the General Assembly over how and whether to restrict businesses from enforcing COVID-19 vaccine mandates is over. House Republicans sent a far less restrictive version of their bill to the governor, who then signed it into law. The original House version of the bill would have forced businesses to grant religious exemptions to getting the vaccine no matter what, but the measure headed to the governor merely requires businesses to follow current federal law when it comes to considering such exemptions. Republican Representative Matt Lehman is the bill's author.
Is it everything that the author of 1001 would like to have? No, but I think this is a good step forward.
House Democrats all voted against the original bill in January, but after the Senate's changes, all but one of them voted for it. Democratic leader Phil Giaquina.
Senate seemed to strike a better balance between keeping employees safe and respecting religious and medical exemptions.
The bill will also allow Governor Eric Holcomb to end the state's public health emergency without losing access to millions in federal funding. Who's the winner in the COVID-19 vaccine mandate debate? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanes, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, Statehouse reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Mike O'Brien, I actually want to ask first about a different provision in 1001, which is an April 16th cutoff to enhanced federal SNAP or food stamp benefits, even if the federal government continues to offer them past that date. Why is Indiana doing that?
Well, first, every indication from President Biden on Tuesday night at the State of the Union and across the country and red and blue states who are lifting mask mandates and other restrictions, the signal from the president on Tuesday night was this: we need to move past this pandemic. And part of moving past the pandemic is ending the enhancements and social support that, much like the enhanced unemployment benefit, was ended in the fall. All of this needs to come to an end, and that's part of it. So what the State House Republicans did in passing House Bill 1001 is they aligned the sunset of that enhanced SNAP benefit with the end of the federal emergency order, which, you know, they could extend it. There's a 30-day extension for those benefits that's built into the April 16th deadline by the Fed, so that those benefits can continue to be offered through May. But if we don't do that, if there are fights across the country to continue to leave these, whether it's enhanced unemployment or enhanced FMAP reimbursement through Medicaid or enhanced SNAP benefits, then what Republicans have said all along for the past 2 years that these COVID accommodations Democrats will use to expand the scope and size of government will be true. Or we do what the president directed on Tuesday night, which was, as a country, begin moving past this and get back to life as normal.
Ann Delaney, when we heard the debate in the General Assembly over this provision of House Bill 1001, we heard Republicans saying, you know, we saw these benefits being useful, but we need to move past it, like Mike just said. But also, federal spending is out of control, and we need to do what we can to limit that. But if Indiana stops accepting these funds, if they continue to be offered past that date, it's not like the federal government's not going to spend the money, right?
Right. And, you know, you've got to ask yourself, we're talking about food stamps. I mean, we're talking about people and children going hungry. And that's how they want to save money. They're willing to cut taxes on corporations and on people making millions of dollars, but they're willing to deny food stamps to people who really need food to survive. It's just incredible to me that's where they try to draw the line. They don't draw the line anywhere that makes sense. And I don't know whether these benefits are going to be extended or not, but if they're going to be extended, it is absolutely mind-boggling that Indiana would turn them down.
And it should be noted that the vast majority of people on SNAP in Indiana are working. They are the working poor, not unemployed.
Exactly.
Nikki Kelly, I want to go back to the question I asked at the top, which is who's the winner in this debate that's played out over this entire session. What in this bill do House Republicans have to hang their hats on?
I mean, they really only have one thing, which is they put in law an exemption for these vaccine mandates for natural immunity. Basically, if you got COVID, you can get this exemption for 3 months. You can maybe get it longer if you show a test again, but you know, at least 3 months. So that's really the only thing different than the law as is now. And I think it's an interesting thing to show and a reason why the legislative process should be deliberative, because when Republicans threw this bill out in November, I mean, it was, oh my God, we've got to do something now. But, you know, things change. You know, there was a major Supreme Court ruling on some of these vaccine mandates. And so the difference between November and now is a world of difference. So, you know, I think that that's a good example of maybe not being too reactive with legislation.
John Schwanes, when all of this started back in November, would you have guessed that this was roughly where we would have ended up?
More or less. I think we saw from the very outset, even though House Republicans, there was that hue and cry among that caucus, we didn't see quite as much zeal from Republicans in the Senate, nor did we certainly see enthusiasm on the part of Republican Governor Eric Holcomb. So I think because of the way the legislative process unfolds, this is fairly typical. We see sort of the fire and the shock and awe, if you know, legislative shock and awe at the beginning. But then, as Nikki suggests, that deliberative process tends to temper things. In the end, I think we end up with philosophy beating pragmatism and practicality. You know, clearly there will be people who are hurting. Even though we have, quote unquote, gone back to normal, there will still be the working poor who are harmed. Children may be hungry. And to Mike's point, if we are to believe and treat everything the president said during Tuesday's State of the Union address as our marching orders, we should also make sure that child care is far more affordable than it is now. We should also make sure that the child tax credit is extended. You can't just take part of what the president said in terms of helping the working poor and ignore the other.
All right. Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question. And this week's question, did the General Assembly find the right balance on the COVID-19 vaccine employer mandate bill? As Representative Phil Giaquina suggested, a yes or B, no. Last week's question, how concerned are you about Russia's invasion of Ukraine? 87% of you are very concerned, 10% somewhat concerned, just 2% not very concerned, and just 1% of you not at all concerned. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, Governor Eric Holcomb wants Indiana to match the lowest individual income tax rate of any state that has one in the country. Holcomb this week unveiled specifics on the tax cuts he'd like to see enacted this session, and that includes eventually lowering the personal income tax rate to 2.9%. The governor, who had long been resistant to major tax cuts this year, says Indiana has the financial flexibility to help Hoosiers struggling with rising prices.
I can give you a long list of inflation that is hitting folks. So now is a time, because we can, we should.
Holcomb's other tax cut proposals largely match what House Republicans have proposed all session, eliminating utility taxes levied on ratepayers and reducing taxes that companies pay on new equipment. Senate Republicans have balked at making cuts now, preferring to wait for a broader discussion in next year's budget session, but Senate President Pro Tem Roderick Bray says his caucus will probably support some cuts.
Like in any negotiation, no one probably gets everything that they want, and we're going to land in a spot that's really good for the state of Indiana.
Holcomb's proposed individual income tax cut would be phased in over 7 years and eventually cost the state $900 million in revenue per year. Ann Delaney, are you surprised at how fast Holcomb has kind of turned around on the idea of significant tax cuts this session?
I'm kind of surprised that he's still around. I mean, he's been MIA on any of these things for within a week of the end of the session, and he finally opines about what he thinks. This is completely fiscally irresponsible, okay? It completely is. a $900 billion impact. We don't have any financial flexibility, like he says, because once the supermajority cuts taxes, they never raise them again, no matter what else is happening, no matter how many services are needed, no matter how many roads need to be fixed. They never do. So what they're willing to do is to drop the bottom line lower and lower and lower without any meaningful discussion. We already have an escape valve. If the surplus gets too high, there are refunds that are given. You know, the difference with his phasing in over 7 years, they won't even be able to buy a tank of gas with the increase for the first couple of years. And yet he thinks it's going to make a difference. It's going to make a difference in what the state can do to improve the quality of life here and to make investments in the future, which is why we're missing out on all these large economic development projects that are going to other states. And he ought to be focusing on why that's happening, not on cutting it from 3.4 or 3.3 to 2.9, as if that's some magic number that's all of a sudden going to make the economic development rain from the skies. It's, you know, I'd like to see him get out there on important issues. You know, the state of Kentucky lost over $3 million of their retirement fund for teachers because they've invested in a Russian bank. What is Indiana doing about that? Why aren't we looking, and not a study commission? When you talk about a deliberative body, a study commission takes a deliberative body to the infinite. It'll be years before anything is done. I'd like to see him show some leadership on issues that really matter, and that's been completely missing this session on the part of Governor Holcomb.
Mike O'Brien, I want to touch on one part of this, which is he wants to phase in this individual income tax cut over, as Ann mentioned, 7 years. If we're trying to put money back in Hoosiers' pockets, it certainly does that literally, but will anyone notice?
No.
Probably not. I've said before, I'm one of the Republicans, like the only one left, I think, that doesn't believe that tax cuts are inherently conservative. I think using a tax code to incentivize behavior you like and disincentivize behavior you don't as a conservative is what it should be used for. But I think in part of this tax package that there is good in that. There is frustration among small business in the business personal property tax that they never stop paying for, you know, the equipment that they and the goods they use to run their or the equipment they use to run their business. There are things in this tax package that are very practical. I prefer just my personal preference is the Senate's approach to this. They were looking at paying down long-term debt, being one of the only states in the country that could eliminate teacher pension debt. And all pension debt for that matter, and wait and see what happens. You know, the other variable that has kind of crept into this is, you know, a recession in Europe that's driven by energy prices. What impact does that have on the United States in the coming months as the Ukrainian, the crisis in Ukraine, continues? You know, there's some variables out here. So I like the long runway for that reason, that it does kind of satisfy the Senate Republican message that we ought to see how reliable these excess revenues are over the course of the next 12 months. And I like some of the mix in tax reduction that they've proposed. The utility tax is important. This is personal property tax is important. That's a really long runway on lowering the income tax to the point where, to your point, I don't think there's not going to be any aha moment when you open your paycheck, but I'm not opposed to giving people their money back if that makes financial sense. And we can balance it against record investments in other places.
John Schwanes, this is the part where I give you a chance to do a victory lap over. You've been talking about the fact that they might try to cut the income tax below 3% so they can say, hey, isn't that better than 3%? So here's your chance for a victory lap.
That's not lost on me. I think I won't gloat, but I do think that this is a lot of marketing or old retail politics here in a slightly different sense from how it's normally construed. I think this is about being able to go out and say to companies that may be considering a move to Indiana, hey, we have among states with an income tax, an individual income tax, we're the lowest. And it's not just 3, it's 2.9. I'll say the same thing I said a few moments ago in response to the first question today, and that is philosophy once again has trumped practicality, it seems to me. If there's perhaps some wise politics in here, or if practicality is still present at all, it's in the slow phase in of this cut. Because while Ann is correct, it's hard for many members of the General Assembly to go back on any kind of cut. Certainly, it is easier to say we are suspending a planned phased reduction than to say we are raising your taxes. Now, it's semantics, yes. Still unlikely that they would want to reverse that. But if there were an economic downturn, if things in the Ukraine produced economic results that we are not anticipating or expecting at this point, that does give us, I think, more as a state, more flexibility to suspend the cut and ensure that we don't end up in the red sooner than we expected.
Nikki, we heard from Mike and John just now the sort of economic headwinds, which is what I think Rod Bray has talked about a lot this session. But, you know, Governor Holcomb, in talking about these specifics this week, said, you know, you want to get money back into Hoosiers' hands because you look at inflation that's raising prices across the board. You look at higher energy prices that Hoosiers and Americans are grappling with. But aren't those also reasons to wait on major tax cuts?
I mean, I think the argument can be made both ways. Earlier in the session, I spoke to a number of economists, and they all said, no, we should wait. And that was before a new war and, you know, even worse inflation and rising gas prices, things like that. But, you know, asking two Republican supermajorities to sit on $5 billion surplus and not use it to their advantage is probably not going to happen.
All right. Well, we'll find out what the final package is like probably next week, so stay tuned for that. But lawmakers in the Senate this week effectively killed a controversial school curriculum and parent oversight bill.
House Bill 1134 went through several changes in the Senate as lawmakers attempted to address concerns plaguing the bill as it moved through the State House. Senate Republicans paused the floor session to discuss the bill multiple times ahead of a key legislative deadline. More than two dozen amendments were filed, but ultimately the bill's author did not bring the bill forward. Senate President Pro Tem Roderick Bray says the caucus couldn't agree on the bill.
Some folks that felt like it didn't go far enough, some folks that felt like it was just difficult policy and not maybe the right policy to begin to dictate what's going on in schools in that way.
House Speaker Todd Houston this week said he thinks it's highly unlikely his caucus will support including any piece of 1134 in any other bills this session.
John Schwanis, was this always where this bill was headed?
Did you ask me that once today already? I think I guess my answer would be the same. This is the same situation, the same scenario I alluded to earlier, where you have a lot of rhetoric, a lot of fiery rhetoric on the part of House Republicans, only to be tempered and moderated by the Senate and with the governor and his opposition to some of these changes in the background. I think in the end, there are three things really at work here. Difficulty in defining what was acceptable and unacceptable. I mean, you can write, you can add as many pages to the code as you want, but ultimately, I don't know how you would define what is divisive and what is seen as acceptable classroom content. Second, you had, I think, a discomfort with at least the original enforcement mechanism. I know there were amendments that would have tried to address this, but basically where you have civil litigation seen as the mechanism by which disgruntled parents could go after school districts and say, I've been aggrieved and my child is, my district has run afoul of statute. And the courts probably would see a surge unlike anything they had seen in the past. So, I mean, those are a couple of factors, certainly, that there's also, we talked about practicality versus philosophy. Teachers are already burdened. They're being tugged on umpteen ways. They're probably not compensated the manner in which they should be. If you had thrown this burden on them, I think the exodus from the classroom among teachers would have only hastened.
Yeah. Mike O'Brien, if this measure was being driven for House Republicans by constituent anger, then what should we make politically of Todd Houston's comments this week that at this stage in the game, either we're going to do all of what we wanted or we're going to do none of what we wanted. Why not try to get something out of it?
He's acknowledging the practicality of where they're at. I mean, they've been working on any number of versions of this now for months. And, you know, the expectation around the State House is they're going to be done on Tuesday. So that gives them exactly one day to figure out, you know, try to bring this back in a way that is acceptable to both the House and the Senate, and the and find a majority position in, you know, in statute in both. I think it just acknowledges the practicality of what they were trying to do is was hard. There's no obvious place to land that satisfies everybody. So where do the emphasis need to be? And we saw as the session went on, the emphasis was more on transparency and less on putting this obligation on teachers to over-inform parents that should be engaged anyway.
And Delaney, Senate Democratic Leader Greg Taylor this session multiple times has said he thinks the Senate is taking a more pragmatic approach on several bills, this being maybe chief among them. Is that what this resolution is?
Oh, I think that is. And you know, there's one other factor here that's changed that we haven't talked about, and that is the filing deadline for primary contests for the Republican supermajority is passed. So now they know whether they have serious opponents or not, as opposed to speculating that they were going to have the right wing attack them from the further right wing attack them at every juncture. So, I mean, that's another variation on this. This was a terrible bill, was poorly thought through. It was a right wing reaction to, I don't even know what. I mean, the things they were railing about in the beginning weren't even happening in Indiana. And I, you know, for example, with the Russian invasion of the Ukraine, could the teachers talk about this unless the curriculum was already published on the online advance of the discussion? Could it make somebody a little uneasy to think that, you know, if you're of a Russian heritage, that people are bad mouthing your country? I mean, it was so bad and so ill thought out that it deserved to die. It's just too bad. So much angst was wasted on this. And I have to give credit to the PTAs and the teachers and the school boards and the principals and superintendents. They were a tremendous force lobbying against this unanimously, and it was time for it to go.
All right. Republicans this week revived a bill to eliminate Indiana's license requirement to carry a handgun in public. A Senate committee took 8 hours of testimony on so-called permitless carry legislation last week, and at the end of it, the committee voted to overhaul the bill, keeping the permit system in place. But House and Senate Republicans are ignoring that outcome and forging ahead with the original language that eliminates Indiana's license requirement to carry a handgun in public. Republican Senator Eric Cook insists that's normal.
It's not unusual for language that passes one house to appear second half elsewhere or appear during conference in a conference committee report.
Democratic Senator Rodney Poole says Republicans are disregarding the objections of law enforcement, which almost universally opposes the bill.
I myself have a sister-in-law that's a law enforcement officer, love her very, very much, and I'm very concerned about what this bill would essentially do.
Both chambers must now vote to approve the bill for it to advance to the governor. Nikki Kelly, I want to talk about process here because process does matter. Is this good process?
Yeah, you know what? It's not the best process I've seen, but it's also not the worst. At least we're doing, you know, there have been times you see language that hasn't passed either chamber end up in a conference committee. So at least it did pass one chamber. Now, if I was on the Senate Judiciary Committee and heard 8 hours of testimony and changed the bill and my leader said, sorry, we're just going to go with this version over here, I'd be pretty perturbed. But I mean, the fact is that it does make people lose faith in the system because they feel like it's predetermined, that it's rigged. And so, you know, that's unfortunate.
I've asked this several times, mostly to John today, but Ann Delaney, was this always, was seeming passage of this bill, because that's where it seemed to be headed, was passage of this bill always what was going to happen this session?
Unfortunately, it was, because the NRA controls. Obviously, the supermajority is willing to put law enforcement more at risk in doing their jobs in order to curry favor with the NRA. And I really think that that is unfortunate. I don't know how they can portray themselves as the law and order party when they disregard an almost universal condemnation of this bill on the part of law enforcement. It does put them at risk. It shouldn't be called constitutional carry. It ought to be called hidden handguns or, you know, let's go after police officers bill. It's really, really a bad bill. And the NRA and the right-wing Republicans will pass it anyway. And the governor will sign it because he has no courage.
Well, to that point, we're out of time on this week's show, but I am curious about what Governor Holcomb is going to do. We talked to him a little bit about that this week. He really didn't say, and was asked a couple times, really didn't say where he's going to land on this bill. We might talk about that next week, if and when, as we assume, that bill passes by the end of session. But that is Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Stay safe, stay healthy, please get vaccinated if you can, and join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana's public broadcasting stations.